I came here as a voluntary worker years ago. But sometimes I still feel a sadness and horror for it. The pointed windows are meshed in iron, and glass galleries circle the front where the patients sit, as if they're ripening in the sun. But the tiled corridors are the worst. You can walk them for miles. They resound with the shouts and mutterings of the inmates, who aren't talking to one another, but to voices from their past. Then it feels as if there's nothing here at all but memories, and even these may be of things that never happened.
A Cruel Madness by Colin Thubron, with Robert Glanister and Harriet Walter.
Once a week, I stop teaching in the local prep school and give English lessons here to the Faraday ward. These men are acute patients, schizophrenics or psychopaths. They aren't mad like the chronics, just normal people in mental pain. But this morning, while I was standing by a dormitory window, I saw her, walking in the garden below. Even after she'd sat on a bench with her back to me, I knew it was her. She didn't move, just sat, gazing in front of her at the crocuses under the trees. Why the hell was she here? Then I realised, of course, she's a doctor. She must have a patient in one of the wards. I walked to the door, planning to go down, then stopped. It was pathetic, I suppose. This monkish schoolmaster dithering at the top of the stairs, afraid of a woman he hadn't seen for half his adult life. When I emerged, she hadn't moved at all. She might have been made of stone. I couldn't stop trembling. It's been 10 years, I thought, and I'm still in this funk. I imagined myself in her eyes and realised I must look completely middle-aged now, although I'm only 40. But I thought, what are you afraid of? It's just a chance encounter with an old girlfriend, 38 now, sitting on a bench in an obsolete loony bin, and you're shivering. Sophia! Sophia! It's Daniel. Won't you talk to me? Won't you even look at me? Look at me.
Look.
Sophia? It was in her hands that I first noticed the change. They were folded on her knees, still slender, but their skin was crumpled round the veins and tendons now. And her eyes went on staring at a level with my waist. They seemed not angry, but fixed, burning.
Look.
What are you looking at? What is it? You're not looking at anything. Sophia.
Oh, God.
Let me take your hand. Give me your hand, Sophia. It's Daniel Pashley. Daniel. Do you remember Daniel?
Daniel.
Do you remember me?
Yes.
Do you? At the school, Sunninggrove. You remember that?
The school.
You remember the school. An English teacher. Daniel Pashley. You came there.
Where?
Some inner light in her had died. She continued to sit erect with her knees together. But even the shape of her face had changed. Its weight had gone downwards, the jaw heavier, little pouches round the mouth. Then I realised that her clothes were not her own, but institutionalised.
Daniel?
Yes, that's right. Look at me.
Look at me. See through me.
What?
Glass. Glass.
I can see you, Sophia.
Now you see me, now you don't.
No. No. What's happened to you? What happened?
She's gone shopping. Sophia's gone shopping. She'll be away an hour, maybe more. She never says.
Don't leave.
Shopping.
Sophia, which ward are you in? Which ward? Wait.
Let go of me.
No, wait. Just a moment.
Going.
Tell me which ward you're in. We'll meet properly. I'm a teacher here.
Going.
What is it you want?
Going.
You can't come any further.
Please. Please let me in.
These are the women's wards.
I've been a teacher all my adult life, but haven't learnt a thing. I was at Sunningrove 10 years ago when I first met Sophia. I arrived 11 years before that, and I still haven't gone. Sunningrove. It's just a 4-storey brick barracks above windswept playing fields. The school colours are red and green, grotesquely right, brick and grass. There's nothing else in sight. The only feature on the red face is a dribble of black fire escapes running from roof to earth. But the grossest thing is McQuitty, the headmaster. Seen from behind, the bulge of his neck is as broad as his head above it. When he smiles, his face hardens into little orbs and bulges of fat, and his teeth glint in warning. To think that I came here to fill in time while deciding what to do with my life. Christ! This place doesn't fit you for anything. The walls circling the grounds are absurdly high, and everything inside them seems embalmed. It's as if the view from my room contained the whole world. Fields, rotting goalposts, rhododendrons. Before Sophia, my passions were diverted into teaching and music. But I ached to fall in love. Love would be reality, the wrench out of this isolation. But in my affairs there always came this panic, a kind of coldness in my chest, as if some force had edged up out of my stomach. I suppose a shrink would blame it on my mother. But it wasn't her fault. People can't help going insane. By the time I was 31, I thought I was immune from love, an emotional eunuch. That was why it came as such a shock. It would never have happened if I hadn't gone to the clinic in town. The usual doctor was a caustic middle-aged practitioner. I imagine he'd been too long in his profession, like me. But when I entered the surgery, he wasn't there.
Dr. Davis is away sick. I'm replacing him at the moment. I'm Dr. Brown. What can I do for you?
Well, I twisted my knee. It's probably nothing much.
May I look at it, please? If you pull up your trouser leg. Can you put more weight on it?
No.
Tell me what hurts. Does that hurt?
No.
That?
No?
No. There?
Yes.
How did you do this?
Playing rugger. I'm a schoolmaster.
You twisted it, falling?
Yes, in tackling practice. A pack of 13-year-olds.
They must have been pretty rough.
Yes, just a bit.
Straighten the knee. Does that hurt?
But I was unable to tell her if anything hurt except some breathless core in me. I couldn't take my eyes from her fingers. The slide of each one over the coarseness of my knee was separate and delicate.
Now bend the knee. Straighten. That hurt?
Yes, a little.
Well, you've torn a medial ligament. It's not serious. I'll give you an elastic bandage and some ointment. Otherwise, just rest. If the swelling hasn't gone down in a week, come back and we'll consider physiotherapy.
Thank you.
I'll make you out a prescription.
Are you in Dr. Davis's partnership now?
No, I'm in another one.
Ah.
He should be back in a few days.
Where will you be then?
What?
Where are you? Your partnership.
That's the other side of town. What's your name?
Pashley. Daniel Pashley.
Right, there you are. Perhaps you'll tell the next patient to come in.
I think I was the last one. Yes, there's no one here. Well, hope to see you sometime.
Yes.
By the week's end, she had rooted herself in my mind and flowered there until there was nothing but her. I tried to find reasons for going back to the clinic. I cursed my knee because it healed. And in the end, I just waited outside the clinic at lunchtime, followed her shamelessly into a restaurant and asked if I might join her.
Well, you've got a nerve. Is your knee better?
Yes. I'm sorry. I don't suppose you get long to eat anyway. You must be tremendously busy. Have you been a doctor long?
3 years. But it's a 7-year training before that.
And you're not married? I'd have thought...
What?
I don't know. I wouldn't be a doctor for anything. I'm no good at caring about people en masse. It's amazing enough to love one.
Who said anything about love? No, no. You soon lose all that. How long have you been teaching?
Oh, too long. 9 years. But I'm getting out.
Why?
It's that place, Sunning Grove. I can't stick it much longer. Boarding school. It's like an execution. Last night, they were whimpering in the dormitories. But what's the point of it? What's it for?
Did you suffer like that yourself?
Me? Well, in a way, I suppose so.
Hmm.
Are you doing a psychiatric job on me?
No. But why haven't you left this school before?
Well, I suppose you get attached in the end. Some of the boys, a few of the masters.
You shouldn't have trouble finding another job. There's a shortage of teachers around here, isn't there?
All the time she spoke, her eyes were fixed on mine. They were the most extraordinary, vivid blue. When I held their gaze for long, I felt I was committing a kind of suicide. She seemed to be reeling me in along her eyebeams like a fish. And her smile had the same effect, like an intensification of light. That evening, I poured down in writing everything Sophia and I had said to one another. She is not married, she had a boyfriend, but they separated 4 months ago. He thought it was a sin to be a career woman, she said, and she laughed. I tabulated all her different kinds of laughter, even what she might have been thinking. But I wondered what on earth she had seen. In the mirror, I saw a 31-year-old man, dark good looks, but two emotional eyes. Sometimes only my eyes strike me as mine. I lay awake a long time, planning how to find a more prestigious job, buy my own place. It was almost dawn before I fell asleep, swearing to myself, I'll get out of here. But the idea of interviews starts me shaking, literally. Anyway, I don't think I'm fitted for change. And for a while, Sunning Grove didn't seem so bad anymore. And the prospect of supper with Sophia, she had promised me this, would have immunized me against hell.
So are all your holidays taken that way, with this old, what's he called, this schoolmaster, Nisbet?
Well, he knows a lot. We both love architecture, the German Baroque, and we've done the Italian gardens together. What's funny?
It's only the idea. Holidays with a maths master. Have you never gone away with anyone else?
Once or twice. Trying to fall in love, I suppose.
And did you?
No, not then. Well, you don't, do you? Not with trying.
No.
Anyway, I don't like lying on beaches.
Nor do I. After a while, I start to twitch. I ought to take your sort of trips, really, and do the German Baroque. Instead, I end up in Cornwall or the Algarve.
Why?
I don't know. I suppose it's the people I've been with. They haven't been interested in the arts.
And who are these people?
Oh, men.
If I were on holiday with you, I'd forget the German Baroque too. Perhaps you should... Perhaps we could go together.
I don't know.
I used to go with my father. Wild scenery. I love that.
Are your parents country people?
My father, yes.
Your mother?
She was a garden lover.
Is she dead?
Yes, she is. In a way.
In a way? A long time ago?
Yes, long ago. Long ago, mother, a garden lover, gazing at a snake in the lily pool. Her eyes look strange. I run against her lap.
Little idiot. It's not an adder. It's just a slow worm. A legless lizard.
Smiling for once, the piercing eyes that went cold.
You like lizards.
Right, now that's enough. Off you go.
Mr. Nisbet. Sir, Mr. Nisbet.
Leave us alone now, boys.
Oh, sir.
That's enough. We've both had enough. What a lot of little brutes.
It's your fault for inciting them, Daniel. Oh, you've had a devil in you recently.
For months you spend all your time in your room, and then suddenly you're everywhere, singing, buffooning, making everybody feel somewhat uncomfortable. What is it? Tell me, which school are we losing you to?
School?
Oh, yes, dear boy, it's that, isn't it? You've been offered another post.
No, no. Nothing of the sort, no. It's a woman.
Well, I confess I had no idea of that, none at all. I hope she's suitable.
She's a doctor in town.
Oh, not a doctor, Sophia Brown?
Yes. Do you know her?
No, alas. I only encountered her professionally, as it were. Last year, I found I had an allergy to aspirin, developed lumps along the spine and so forth. It was certainly Dr. Brown who treated me. I remember the name.
What did you think of her?
Oh, she seemed most efficient. She prescribed Piriton, I think.
But her? What of her?
I really can't remember very much. I dare say she was quite pretty.
Pretty? That's for ornaments. You must remember.
No, I'm sorry. I just hope it goes well for you, Daniel. Please forgive me for saying this, but sometimes you worry me. There are such strong forces in us all. Too strong. Oh, come in.
Excuse me. Mr. Pashley, the head wants to see you, sir.
What, now?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, all right. Might as well be a butler.
Yes, indeed.
McQuitty's growing harsher by the week. He instills fear in everyone. I think he enjoys it. That rapping of his knuckles on the desk, it's like the sound of fear. But how strange. Not anymore. Sophia's freed me from him. And I don't give a damn.
And where do we think we've been this afternoon?
I've been in town.
In town? In town? And you didn't by any chance have any feeling you'd forgotten anything?
No.
You don't recall that you were meant to be supervising the upper force detention? No. Instead, you left them to create bedlam. Bedlam! I can hear the noise 10 walls away.
I do apologise, Mr. McQuitty. I completely forgot.
Oh, we do apologise, do we? And who do you think had to cope with the bedlam? I had to myself.
Mr. McQuitty, I've been teaching here for over 10 years, and this is the first time...
It's not only today, it's all this term. You've not been pulling your weight.
I've been
pulling
my...
No, you've suddenly got thoroughly unreliable. What's wrong with you?
I've fallen in love.
Be your age.
Don't patronise me, McQuitty. My feelings aren't for you to judge.
No member of my staff. I've never been spoken to like this before.
No.
You'd better go now, Romeo.
It was the kind of evening which you later imagine full of sunlight. The golden wash obtained by underexposed film. Sophia and I walked to her garden's end, where a goldfish pond was filled with leaves.
Daniel, there's something about you I don't understand.
What's that?
I don't know. If I knew, I'd understand it.
Then an extraordinary thing happened. Her hands came up and cut my cheeks as if she were going to kiss me. It sounds nothing, but she had this strange gift. All at once, she'd intensify and soften. I crouched down by the pool. A few lily pads stirred above the bed of leaves. I felt slightly sick.
Little idiot, it's not an adder. It's a slow worm. A legless lizard. You like lizards.
She remained standing above me. I looked up and saw her blue-veined hand absolutely still against the blue dress. And on one finger was a ring. On the marriage finger.
What's this?
Oh, Daniel, I just wear this for my patients. Some of the men get ideas. I seem to attract the over-40s.
Thank God.
You idiot.
Oh, thank God.
If I could stop time, I'd stop it there. Yet the instant of kissing her was touched by recognition, as though I was living an instant from the life of somebody else. Someone unimaginable. I don't know if her lips were really so different from anybody else's. But I kissed them on and on.
Oh, Daniel.
Sophia, please. Now, can't we? Please.
Not now.
But it's unbearable to remember this after what happened. For the moment, I want to stay here. Just for a while. I want to stay here. They don't admit many new chronics to the asylum now, and the average age is growing older all the time. The patients' vegetable plots were grassed in years ago, and as for the old football pitch, no one can even remember using it. Faraday Ward houses 18 acute patients, and you'd think half of them were already institutionalised. By the late afternoon, most of them are sitting around the walls, staring at television. There's no privacy. The beds leave only slivers of cubicles narrower than sunning groves. And a charge nurse sits in a glass office overlooking the TV room on one side and the dormitory on the other. The boss is the bastard of the ward. I suppose there's always got to be one. He's a depressive, grossly built. He surrounded himself by a circle of card-playing cronies who sit in the dining area most afternoons gambling at poker. The others are afraid of him. My favourite is old Gregory, who was a librarian in his previous life, as he calls it. He's been in and out of here for years.
I don't know how often, Daniel. It's been so long now. And sometimes I feel I'm not here at all. It's as if I've lost myself somewhere. Oh, it's hard to tell. I think I was more solid before.
Solid?
When I was young. You know, there was more of me to stay anywhere. But now I've turned light. Very light.
That's just a feeling, Gregory. Well, it's not real.
The psychiatrist says it's my parents, but they always do, don't they? I don't blame my parents for not wanting me. You can't blame people, can you? It's no good blaming people.
No, no. Tell me, Gregory, do you know many of the chronics, the women?
Oh, I've never talked to the female patients.
Have you noticed a new one? She'd be 38 now, slim, brown haired. Her name's Sophia Brown.
They're all old, Daniel.
Yes, but there's a new one.
Are you sure? Well, then I'd try speaking to the administration. They've got us all on file. Administration will tell you anything you want to know.
But I wasn't sure what I wanted to know. Patient's diagnosis are kept secret. For the next 4 days, I couldn't concentrate on teaching at all. Several times I went and sat on the bench in the gardens, as if this would magically draw her. I haunted the community hall and the social room. But the nursing staff I questioned all served on the men's wing. I waited outside the iron door of the women's wards, but nobody came in or went out. I wrote her a letter and posted it in the hospital mailbox. But she didn't reply. And she didn't come. Then I wondered, was she a perfectly sane visiting doctor? Had she feigned madness to revenge herself on me? But at night I remember her new face and voice, and then I think, better to let her be. Even if I knew her clinical diagnosis, what could I ever do? It's only in legends that love retrieves people from the dead.
Hi, fellas! Fellas, I love you! I love you all!
Who's he?
He's the new patient.
It's good to be here. It's good to be among you.
Holy hell, a real-life 60s flower shitter.
I'm Tom Orgel. Tom, everything's going to be all right. Great to meet you. What's your handle?
You can just call me Boss. Where are you sprung from, a pansy bed?
I'm no gay, mister. You're betting having more women than you've had farts. Good to know you, Boss.
For Christ's sake.
Everything's going to be all right.
Hi.
I'm Pashley. I teach English here.
Oh, glad to see you, Mr. Pashley. English, marvellous. I love language. Does anyone here like language?
Well, of course. Yes,
soulmate. I'm composing poetry all the time. Reams of it. Look here. You and me will get together.
Oh, blimey.
We're all in this together, aren't we? If we don't help one another, where are we going to be? Hey, Nuss! Nurse!
Calm down, Mr. Orgel. Don't excite the other patients. Will you please all queue up for your medicines now?
Christ. Why am I on Largactyl? That's heavy, isn't it?
That's what's been prescribed.
Well, I hope they know the shop, these doctors. Because I'm a free individual.
Every man has a right to decide what penetrates his body. And every woman too, sweetie. What happens if I just pretend to swallow these capsules?
They'd be prescribed to you in syrup form. Then we can be sure. Have any more queries? Good.
You make a king loony of yourself, Tom Orgill. One of those sweet little nurses. She'll run up behind you with a needle, fill your arse with Valium. Then you'll wake up in disturbed ward with a knitting circle of chronics. Or they'll put you in electroconvulsive, where you come out, your eyes will just be burnt out piss holes.
Are you bollocking me, boss? You're bollocking me.
What's wrong with that guy? How long has he been in?
He's paranoid. Try and ignore him. Especially when he starts rapping his pipe like that.
Sure. I'll ignore him. What you want in this place is celebration. Something to cheer up the boys. Someone to show you the sun lifting above the earth. Show you the glory.
But suddenly I wasn't hearing his voice anymore.
It's very distinct.
Another voice, much softer, had intruded and overlaid it. For a second, I thought it was in my head. It was so deeply remembered. Then I realized that it came from the passage beyond the door.
Very distinctive.
Sophia, who were you talking
it's
to?
Very distinctive. Very distinctive.
Oh. How long have you been in this hospital?
I've always been here. Can you see me?
Well, you're not transparent.
Good. What are you doing here?
I'm a voluntary teacher. I teach English. Daniel Pashley.
English?
Yes, words, essays. Sophia, write one about your life. Try to remember. Will you write it? About the important time. I'll help you. We'll remember together.
I remember alone.
Do you remember? Where can we meet?
I come past here. To the sewing room.
What sewing room?
The OT sewing room.
The occupational therapy sewing room. Is that right?
Yes.
Sophia, tell me, what is my name?
Daniel.
What is your name?
You said Sophia.
You are Sophia.
Sophia. Yes. We have high tea now. It's disgusting.
I'll see you tomorrow in the sewing room. Here. I'm Daniel. You're Sophia. Remember.
Remember. Remember.
Last night, I dreamt that my head was split up into 20 different rooms, and that in each one Sophia was sitting quite still, reading, or staring ahead of her. But in the dream, her face was that of 10 years ago. The impact of those days has nothing to do with their number. I saw her for barely a month. Twice a week we had supper together and went for walks. Then we'd lie on the sofa in her sitting room, fondling with the passion of teenagers. Hours passed simply in my exploration of her face as it laughed at me from the cushions. With every change in her expression, she became unknown again. I kept returning to her mouth, ran my lips along the insides of hers, entered their darkness. But sometimes I'd feel fear. My tongue wasn't answered by hers, but only by the mouth's slightly bitter-tasting walls, as if this were the beginning of nothingness. Yet I was weak with longing. For hours I caressed her shoulders, eased away the bra to kiss them. When her breasts came fluttering into my hands, I felt a moment of possession more complete than ever happened again. Until my fingertips came against her groin. Against the last soft flesh of her. But her eyes, I think, never closed. Even in the deepest kiss, I would open mine to see hers staring at me, as if she were deciding what to do. I pleaded to enter her. But she would only look distracted or simply ask me to wait. She never gave reasons, and I'd think, Christ, I'm 31. Sometimes I had the sensation that we were holding each other on an abyss edge. Everything was precarious, as if this ache created something precipitous just beyond itself, so that I closed my eyes. There was some fearful frailty in me, I knew. I thought it was physical. I even considered seeing a doctor. But then she was a doctor. The next time I saw her, I thought I'd tell her. But the next time was different. The whole day sickens in my memory. The woods. The river. Her picnic spread out from its hamper.
Daniel.
Hmm?
I have to say something, which you're going to find hard.
Yes?
I just don't think I can take any more.
What do you mean?
I mean this. This. I'm not doing you any good, Daniel.
Good?
I think you need some other kind of woman. I don't know what kind, but not me. It's been lovely, Daniel, but for me it's just been an ego trip. I don't want it any more. I'm going away.
Away?
I'm giving up my practice here, going to London. There's a shortage of...
London's not far.
We can't go on, Daniel. I'm leaving you.
I'll change my job.
No.
I will.
Please understand, you're only making things worse. I can't love you. I want to, but I can't.
Why can't you? Tell me.
It's just hurtful. I don't know, anyway. You frighten me.
I frighten you?
Yes, you make me frightened of myself. But I don't want to talk about it. There's no point. I don't understand it.
Are you going with anyone else?
It's nothing to do with anyone else.
How long will you go for?
Understand, I'm not coming back. We won't see each other again. I'm going away forever.
Forever?
Don't look like that. It's not the end of the world.
It is. That is what it is.
I think we should go back. Give me the bread, man.
No.
I'm going back.
Please. Please. Come back. Stay.
No.
Stay.
Leave me alone.
Stay. Stay.
Leave me alone.
You can't go.
Put the knife away.
Stay. In early morning, when the mist steals off the hills and round the hospital, I imagine the whole institution underwater and its trees turn to seaweeds. The windows become portholes onto a void, and a film of damp covers everything, glistening along the corridors. If the atmosphere becomes too oppressive, I go to the library. There are banks of illustrated travel books on Germany and Italy, and big tomes of nature study, architecture, all kinds of things. I should have known that Sophia wouldn't reappear in the sewing room, and she didn't turn up in the public rooms either. Somewhere else, she was rotting away. But on the night of the hospital's music evening, I thought, this time I must see her. More than 100 patients were crammed into the community hall, with the staff seated amongst them and the lights dimmed. I went and sat with Orgil and a group of acutes. I scanned the doors, hoping to glimpse her. But I couldn't watch all the entrances at once.
One and all. Hi there, everybody. Now, who's going to give us a song? Show us all what you can do and get famous. There you go, sir. Come right up.
These guys are into some real crappy stuff.
And what are you going to sing for us, sir?
Daisy, Daisy. Daisy, Daisy. Give me your answer, do. I'm half crazy for the love of you. They wrap you up in paper bags and tie you up with string. They do, they wrap you up in paper bags and tie you up,
All right, all right. And let's have the next.
What are you looking around for, Prof?
I'm looking for one of the chronics.
A woman, but it's too dark.
Okay, one and all. Give the lads a rest, shall we? And let's have talent from the floor. Well, let's be hearing from you.
Yes.
Come on, folks. Twang a few heartstrings, yes. Ladies. Or one of you fellows, start the feet tapping.
That's you, boss.
Who's it going to be? Well, let's be here. Ah.
Yes, someone else has gone up. Good on you, lady.
That's her.
That's her. Great, great. Come on. She looks kind of sad.
It's easy to see.
Ah, an old favourite known to many. I think we can manage that.
She's looking at you.
She can't be. She's not seeing anything.
It's easy to see why all who learn to know you love you. You're gentle and kind. I'm always dreaming of you. No matter what I do, I can't forget you. Sometimes I wish that I had never met you. Sometimes I wish that I had never met you.
She's going out!
Oh, God. Excuse me. Oh.
All right. Excuse me. Sophia?
Sophia.
You here?
You were going to meet me.
Why?
You said you'd write your story. You were going to remember.
Story? Can you look in my shoe? Is there a splinter? Ah, there it is.
She was handing me a sliver of papers. She looked childishly proud. The papers were not handwritten, but neatly typed. Slowly, then in a flood, I began to hope. All her mental force seemed to have gone into writing instead of into speech. I imagine she must be suffering from one of those schizophrenias which leave the past unimpaired beneath the deranged present. Then I noticed the paper. It was yellow with age. Perhaps the thing had been composed years ago as a cathartic exercise for some analyst. It was impossible to tell. Completely mystifying. I'd been 2 years in my practice when a strange thing happened. This fervid-looking man came to my clinic. He looked so pitifully nervous that I thought he must be seeking help.
I imagined some embarrassing infection. But later, sitting in a crowded restaurant, I realized that he simply wanted to talk. He poured out questions on every aspect of my life and absorbed the answers with an odd intentness. I began to find him distasteful. Then his talk became a mass of loves and enthusiasms. Music, Italy, architecture, Russian literature. It was infectious. He made you feel the world was different from the one you'd experienced, more vital and precious. There came a time when I realized I didn't find him pathetic any longer, but rather awesome. His eyes never left my face. They stared with a kind of burning softness. It was amazing, I thought, after all these years, because I'd never had much success with men. My figure's too scraggy and my hair almost mouse-coloured. I even started to blush. Nobody had ever looked at me like that before. He was good-looking, in a slightly disconcerting way, a long, bony face and full lips, and his eyes had this intensity. Whenever I was with him afterwards, I felt that sensation of being worshipped and wondered at. He never talked about politics or sport like other men. Instead, he'd ask what I felt about religion or German architecture or Beethoven's violin concerto, so I'd discover thoughts and feelings I didn't know I had. He wasn't intellectual, so much as emotional and imaginative, with an almost photographic memory. Sometimes I felt uncannily as if we were leafing through illustrations in books. I don't know who was hypnotizing who. His stare only left my face to travel over my neck and breasts, such as they are, and then back to my eyes. I didn't have to do or say anything. It was enough simply that I was there. Maybe I was decadent to bask in him. But sometimes, strangely, I felt that I became a little what he believed me to be. At that first meeting, I even heard myself giving the impression that I'd been away on numerous holidays with men. He looked as if he was on a knife edge.
Perhaps,
Perhaps we could go together.
I don't know.
I used to go with my father. Wild scenery, I love that.
Are your parents country people, then?
My father, yes.
Your mother, is she dead?
Yes, yes.
Then, for the only time that he was with me, his eyes went vague, and his voice grew softer and softer, as if he was retreating into the distance.
Yes, she is, in a way.
A long time ago?
Yes.
Quite mystifying. I could have felt the hurt without my sketchy training in psychology. We never mentioned her again, but I think she belongs to the living dead. She continues in his mind. At first it was comical that whole evenings passed while his kisses just tore my face on a kind of holy pilgrimage. He behaved as if each evening was our last on earth. Often I could accept his love as something outside myself, but at other times, when his kissing went very deep or his fingers overran me, I'd feel wrenched out of true. It was as if the bottom had dropped out of my ordinary nature, and this writhing, crying thing was actually me. Yet I refused him entry. I think I was terrified of being owned. I felt myself, my wholeness, to be there still inside me. If he'd insisted, I'd have succumbed. But he was a mixture of terrible passion and respect. Perhaps that's what in the end was unendurable. Being sacred. I became frightened. Suddenly I decided to end it. We spread out our picnic near the old iron bridge. I felt a cold sadness. He filled the void with small talk while I mentally separated myself from him, until we were left with silence.
It's beautiful here.
Daniel, I just don't think I can take any more. I'm going away.
Away?
I stretched out my hand to him. I wanted his forgiveness, but he only gazed at it as if it was a snake or the Holy Grail.
Away?
Daniel, I can't love you. I want to, but I can't. I didn't know if either of these was true. In any case, he accepted nothing. I might as well have talked to the air, and as he grew stubborn, I became angry. Yet I felt, strangely, as I moved away, that I was leaving the core of me here, in him, and that it was only a shadow that was folding up the tablecloth, walking off.
Please, please come back. Stay!
No! Leave me alone! Leave me!
Stay!
Put the knife away.
Stay!
Then I saw his terror die away, and he was transfigured by a surge of calm. I think I already knew what he was going to do, but my fear had gone, although I love life. When I saw the knife, I was filled by a feeling almost of naturalness, as if I was going to be embraced. It wasn't like dying at all.
How cold it is here. April already, and the corridors quaking as if sleet were driving through. The term at Sunninggrove is over, and I spend more time here. But when the weather warms, I believe she'll return to the garden. She loved gardens. Or sit in the pavilion under the trees like the other patients do. For all I know, she's been here years, and I haven't noticed. But there's an ugliness in this ward. It's splitting into camps. The boss and his poker players sit in the dining area while money goes between them. They seem to be in conference. While Orgel has become leader of another group who are painting the dormitory blue. It's when everyone gathers in the television room that the trouble starts.
How long are we having half blue walls in the dorm? Are we all going to sleep with paint fumes for the next 5 years, Orgel?
Don't you bug yourself, boys. It'll be done. Tomorrow, maybe day after. This lounge could take a gloss, too.
You could lay a paintbrush on here and I'll crack your skull in. Anyway, that sort of thing gets decided in patience council. You can't paint every goddamn thing in sight.
But look at it now. Some kind of maroon gunk. No wonder everyone's depressed in here. Let's do it sky blue.
Your favourite colour, I'll bet. Baby blue.
God, boss, you're so old. I reckon some of you guys just want to be gloomy. You're revelling in it. Do you know I haven't heard one laugh since I came into this ward? Not a single laugh.
Laugh? What's that laugh about here? The only ones who laugh here are the chronics. If you laugh, it means you're bloody screwball. They'll put you up in disturb.
Not so much as a chuckle or a compliment. Not even a smile. Nothing. Look, boss. Just look out of the window, fellas. Look at the sun lifting over the earth. Look at that and believe anything. See the glory.
see the holiness.
Are you some pukey kind of Christian?
Sure, I'm Christian.
And what that Buddhist music you're playing? What?
Look, man, Buddha, Jesus, you, me, him. What's the difference? That's not where it's at.
I love you, man.
I go out and look for Sophia again. I can follow the way blindfold now, into the social room, round the occupational therapy galleries, into the sewing room, but she's never there. And if she were, what would we do or say? I come to the library. Its air is a golden dust. I'm not surprised to find Gregory there.
I couldn't stay up in the ward, Daniel. It makes me feel I'm going over the border. To see Orgil and his friends praying round a bed, and the boss like a bloodhound. We're headed for something bad up there.
The boss shouldn't be there much longer. He must be ready for discharge.
Oh, you're just saying that, Daniel. He won't go yet. Perhaps not ever. He's a severe schizophrenic, even I can tell that. Perhaps that's why he can look inside people.
He doesn't look inside. Gregory, I need your help.
My help?
Yes, you're the only one I can trust.
Oh, what is it?
You know this woman I've been worried about? Well, she's someone I used to know.
Used to know, Daniel?
Yes, a long time ago. I've got to find out what's wrong with her. I need to get her diagnosis.
Oh, no, that's impossible. You can't. They never let them out.
But I have to, Gregory. She may be curable. I've heard of patients who turn out not to be schizophrenic at all, but just hysterical. They copy the disorders of the patients round them. They feign madness, just produce symptoms to order.
Why would they? And what could you do?
I don't know. But I can't do anything until I know what's wrong. I need to get at the lists. The lists of patients from administration.
Oh, you can't, Daniel.
Where do they keep them?
Well, they keep copies in that office. The one that overlooks the dormitory and the television room. But it's all glass.
And I'll need just 5 minutes in there to find it. 5 minutes. Someone has to create a diversion to get the nurse out.
Oh, no. No, you can't. You can't do that sort of thing. No, no. Oh, no. No.
Gregory.
No.
Gregory.
No.
Gregory. All you've got to do is pretend sickness in the TV sitting room. Just slip off your chair onto the floor. That'll bring the nurse out.
But she'd lock the office door behind her, Daniel. They always do.
Not if you do it suddenly enough.
I couldn't. No, I just couldn't. I'm sorry. Ask one of the others.
I can't trust the others. If you refuse, you may be condemning somebody to madness. Have you ever been inside a chronics ward? If you think this ward's bad...
But if they think I'm ill, they'll want to treat me. They'll think I'm going down again. They could even try electroconvulsive.
Then I'll have to ask Orgil. He's the only one who'd dare.
But where will you hide?
I won't. I'll get him to faint in the TV room while I pretend to be asleep in the dormitory. But I need someone with me to watch when the nurse is coming back. Now, will you do that? Do that at least.
Well...
I lay down on the bed near the glass office between the dormitory and the TV room. Gregory was muffled in the bed next door. I unstrapped my watch and placed it by the pillow. Orgil had promised to faint in the TV room at 9:30. I could see in the office the nurse's face was lowered in shadow. Reading.
It's 9:30.
I know. Wait.
Now what's wrong, Mr. Orgil?
She's going out. Quick, now. Keep your head down and pull the screen across. Just watch the TV room. He's on the floor. She's got her back to us.
There are too many files. Medication, group therapy, DAM, director of nursing, general list.
Have you found it?
Yes, but there are too many names to the page.
She's still got her back turned.
Adams, Allen, Benson, Briftier, Carson. She's not here.
What about the other drawer?
That's just the Faraday ward.
That's us?
Yes. McQuitty, Marriott, Morgan. Here's yours. Gregory Nisbet.
Oh.
Orgill. Pashley. Ah. Oh. Pashley. Daniel. Diagnosis. Chronic dissociative state. Depersonalization syndrome.
What's all that? That bit?
Those are my previous admissions. Rehabilitation homes. Christ, so many.
Oh, what's that?
Unit psychiatrist progress report. The patient composes cathartic stories showing his usual inability to distinguish between fact and fantasy. These seem partly wish fulfillment and partly quite sophisticated attempts to come to terms with a real or imagined loss. Here's something dated yesterday. Note from unit psychiatrist to charge nurses. Pashley is showing symptoms of impending relapse. Will probably peak in 10 to 12 days. I have amended his drug regimen. Keep me informed.
We'd better go back.
Yes. It's still not a lie that I'm a worker here. They let me run an essay competition, and the unit psychiatrist says he's found the results helpful. But it's true I composed Sophia's story myself. I can only say that it was meant as an effort to understand her, to sympathise with how she must have thought and felt. It may even have touched the truth. Orgill has this dangerous charisma. They're in the dormitory most afternoons, he and his clique, sitting round his bed. They gather for their mystic ceremony or whatever it is, but a bit to one side of the door panel now so you can't see them. The staff don't interfere. But Orgill's like a wild Christ. His bed becomes an altar. The boss is out of sight, of course. He and his lot play canasta in the dining area now. Sometimes they dissolve in blackness. But the boss is like a bulldog. Once he gets you by the neck, he never lets off, but goes on, scruffing and munching until he can choke you.
You've been talking to yourself, Ashley. Did you know you jabber under your breath?
No, I don't jabber. I'm sure I don't.
Oh, we don't jabber. I tell you, you're a one-man chat show. Well, no, and I'll tell you another thing which makes it worse. We haven't been taking our drugs properly, have we? Thought nobody'd noticed, did we? But I've seen you make those swallowing motions, then up comes the pills into your hand after the nurse has gone.
Those pills slow me up. Then I can't find her.
You're getting freaky, Ashley.
My legs feel suddenly light. I look at them to make sure they're there. They seem a long way down, but it's all right. She's never there. The rooms don't seem able to contain her, as if she couldn't inhabit them, as if the air were wrong. It's true I've been spitting back my pills. You just flick them behind your teeth and make sure your Adam's apple moves. The nurses don't watch me much. How can I find her if I'm half doped? In any case, medication can't cure my disorder. I've had everything over the years. Amphetamine, electroconvulsive, every drug going. It just proves they haven't got a clue. Then I see her. She's sitting in the corner with a cup of orange juice, and opposite her a dwarf woman with chopped-off hair. Sophia is looking at her with that intensity which I loved. But I know the blue eyes aren't seeing anything much. And now the dwarf gets up and hobbles away, and Sophia goes on gazing at the place where she was. But she's not in pain, I know. In essence, she's dead. Yet I go and sit in the dwarf's place.
Hello, Daniel.
Sophia, you recognise me. Tell me, which ward are you in? Why don't you ever come out? What are you doing in there?
Yes.
You said you'd write about your life for me. Do you remember?
Oh, yes.
Please.
I'll send it to you. Now I have to go. 9 o'clock medication.
What pills do you take? What do they do to you?
They give me rest.
Rest?
Yes. Rest. Have you been here long?
I don't know. I can't even remember how long. Don't go! Sophia, will you tell me your married name?
Glass. Glass, now you see me.
Stop it. Stop it. Are you married? You're not registered under Brown, are you?
Do you? Do you still see me?
Are you married?
No.
Stop. She knows perfectly well what she's doing. She's absolutely sane. Something's going wrong with my body. It's just there beneath me. Perhaps in a minute it won't be mine. As if I'm disintegrating. Even my face. I have to keep getting it back in the mirror. If I don't examine it, it may grow away from me.
Ah, Mr. Pashley, shall we have our talk now?
Talk?
You remember me, your unit psychiatrist. Shall we have our talk?
Yes. Yes, okay.
Sit down, Mr. Pashley. Now, you may have felt yourself slowing down recently. That's because you could be approaching one of your bad times. So your drug dose has been a little increased.
Oh, I see.
Since the next few days may be rather anxious ones for you, I think it would help to talk personally. Tell me what you're finding bothersome.
There's been a terrible coincidence, Doctor. This woman, the one I told you about, she's here, in the hospital. She must be registered under her married name. I know she isn't your patient, Doctor, but could you look into it?
I think we need to investigate this in greater depth, Mr. Pashley. We talked once before about your feelings of loss, if you remember, in relation to women.
Look, Doctor, can you do anything for her?
Mr. Pashley, do you believe in ghosts?
No. Do you?
Yes. In a way, I do. You see, an upset mind finds it hard to distinguish between wish and fact. People suffer this with the dead, for instance. They wish to believe them back, and therefore they create them. And then they believe what they've created. Now, I know you can see Sophia, Mr. Pashley. I realize that. But it is possible that other people can't. Perhaps she's particular to you.
You're saying I've just invented her, but all you've got to do is check out the women's ward. Why do we have to go through this?
Mr. Pashley, let's approach the matter from another direction. There can be so many reasons for anxiety, you realize. Your own life, for instance, began in anxiety when your mother left you.
Look, Doctor, I'll save you the trouble of going on. I'm not in love with my mother, if you want to know. I loathe her. She left me when I was 8, and I don't have a single happy memory of her. That's unkind, I know, since she was mad.
Do you remember her saying?
No. I think she behaved oddly, even in my earliest memory.
So how old were you then?
I'm not sure. But I remember her hand was level with my head. It was very slim, blue-veined. So I must have been about 4. Little idiot, it's not an adder. It's just a slow worm, a legless lizard. But it wasn't, you see. It was an adder. I was saner than her even then.
I see. Do you remember her leaving?
Two people came for her. A man and a woman in ordinary dress. I don't know who they were. I asked them how long she'd be gone, and they said not long. My father locked himself in his room. She went very quietly. I watched them leave, crouched in the laurel bush by the gate. The woman says, "Poor little mite, how can you tell him she's going away forever?" The smell of laurel bushes still makes me sick.
Keep calm, Mr. Pashley.
I am calm.
Well, then, why?
Look, Doctor, I don't see any point in this. I asked you about Sophia, and we end up in my childhood. Can you please do something about her?
You won't even consider that your experience of this person may be wish fulfillment, that she may be exclusive to you?
Wish fulfillment, Doctor, it's pure hell. I don't love her anyway. I think I hate her. All you've got to do is check out the women's wards.
I know the women's wards well, Mr. Pashley. Sophia is a very distinctive Christian name, and there's nobody called that here. The women's wards are being phased out in this hospital. Our youngest female patient is 62 years old.
Then she's a doctor here.
There are no women doctors in this hospital. Have you been taking your pills properly?
Yes. Oh, yes. An hour later, when the charge nurse gives out the drugs, mine has been liquefied into a colourless syrup, and I'm watched as I drink it. But a whining has grown in my ears, and my legs seem to be treading water. I hear them clopping over the floor as if somebody is walking beside me. And this evening, there arrives proof of the psychiatrist's idiocy. When I open the envelope in the dormitory, 8 pages slide out onto my bed. Her handwriting has grown jagged, but it's hers all right. She's just scrawled above it, "Here you are." He's the type I always attract, of course, Wetts and Runts Limited. He reminds me of besotted medical students from my first year at college.
I suppose I should feel pity, but some people's feelings are just too farcical to elicit patience, and immortal passion isn't my scene. Daniel is always romanticising himself, as he does everything. He has to invest his past with mystery, as if it was dense with illumination. It's grotesquely entertaining, because, of course, there's nothing in his past, nothing. He describes his holidays among Italian gardens, but he's never been to these places. He's just read it all up in the library.
Damn you!
My body's a well-toured male province, and it's novel to have someone treating it as virgin. He goes crawling across it like a geologist, uncovering a stratum here, a vein there. Takes a whole evening to exhaust even the low-grade deposits of my bosom. Oh, well. I don't think I want to torment him. He's tormented enough as it is. I'm just the catalyst of pain which was already waiting.
Oh, damn you!
By the time we laid out the picnic by the bridge, he looked as if he was facing a firing squad. I didn't even want to look at him. I just wanted him to go away of his own accord, which of course he didn't. "I think you need some other kind of woman," I said.
You know perfectly well there are only 2 kinds, the one you love and the rest.
His dopey expression maddened me. He decided not to understand. He wasn't even going to try. His isn't love at all in any ethical sense, just need. It's the kind of mania that tries to dignify itself by words like devotion and passion. Absolute crap, in other words.
But you kiss me back, damn you.
His eyes took on their cod's look of bulging and dangling, and I thank God I was getting out of this before he went round the bend. Every common sense in him was sacrificed to this idolatry.
Only people like you who describe love like that. You only reason because you can't feel.
By now, his wincing gave me pleasure. I went on with calculated slowness so that the words sank in. "Understand," I said, "we won't see each other again. I'm going away forever." He just sat there, of course, with his look of drowning. Since he took 5 minutes to assimilate anything I said, I spent the interval collecting the picnic. Then his feet came thumping through the leaves behind me. We stopped on the bridge. I could tell from his face that he hadn't accepted anything, nothing at all. He'd just lapsed back into his dreams. He was flourishing the knife as if he could kill me, but of course he can't. He knows he can't. You can cut out plenty with the knife, but not that.
Not that. All right, yes, I know. That might not be what she actually wrote. She's probably incapable of writing at all by now, but that's what she's really like. Why shouldn't I admit it? She'd write that if she could. But the mad have no voice. Sometimes I think she's in this ward, infecting it, leaking in through the fire escapes and windows or through the overhead lights. It's impossible to tell. There must be a power shortage somewhere. The light is so weak. It's closing in all the time, the air shaking slightly. If you're very still, you can feel it quivering like a heat haze. But
it's cold. Everybody knows there's a holocaust coming. Orgil's lot are always in the dormitory now, ranged round the beds. God knows what they do. Everybody's taking sides. The booming in my stomach never lets up, and beneath my waist another person begins. I don't know who. But the staff either can't see what's coming or take no notice. They despise us. I think they all hate us. We're useless. They can't even envisage our wounds, let alone heal them. They're still giving me my drug as a syrup to make Sophia invisible. The nurse watches while I drink it, so I have to go into the washroom afterwards and tickle my throat with a toothbrush until the syrup sicks itself up again. Sometimes it takes half an hour, but I don't stop until it's all out. They're not destroying her like that. But we have to get out of here. I'm going to take her away. I find a pen and write her a message. Just a time and place of meeting. I know she can reach the place even late at night because it's outside, where the fire escape comes down from the women's wards. I take the message to the iron door and thrust it into a nurse's hands, the name huge on its envelope, and walk quickly away. Now I'll go wherever the others aren't. Stay very still to stop the airiness creeping up. Let everything inside me wait. There's scarcely any light. Sometimes they switch it off inside the window panes. But I'm not taking any chances. This afternoon, I spew up the poison under the shower, and it comes quite easily. But my stomach shakes in my hands, so I have to hold very still. But nobody notices. We're meeting at 9 this evening, and I can't put off my packing much longer. Not that there's much, but I have to be sure. The lawns outside look sodden, and the old football grounds. It won't be hard to scale the wall beyond. But the moment I enter the ward, the air is jangling, and it's too late to go back.
It's the boss, Daniel. Somebody took his money, he says.
Oh. Mr. Pashley, you haven't by any chance...
No.
Mr. Nisbet, you're not aware of having any extra money with you?
No, I don't keep money. No, no, I haven't. No.
Perhaps
no.
We remember seeing something, do we, Mr. Pashley? I'd be grateful if we can remember.
No, I don't.
We didn't happen even to pick anything up off the floor.
Nothing.
Hi, fellas. Anything good on the telly?
Say, boss, what's the worry? You got the clap?
Don't twit me, Orgill. One of you gone and filched 55 quid out of my coat, and I want to know who.
So that's me, boss, but it won't be one of my boys. We are not into money.
Don't give me that bullshit. Just tell me if you've seen anything.
Are you accusing me?
I'm not accusing anyone.
Let's get away from here, boys. This room kind of stinks. Let's go to the dawn.
But the last light is being choked out by cigarette smoke. If only I knew where she was. The clock says only 6:15, but the boss and his gang have gone to play poker in the dining area, and Orgill's clique are in the dormitory, so I can't get my outdoor clothes. I just have to wait and hope this thing won't break, because everything's waiting for it. Even outside, the trees have gone still, and there's nobody walking anywhere. The clock is slowing down. This juddering in the room, too. It's waiting. But when it breaks, she and I will be gone. Out there in the dark, there'll only be us. Then it will be over at last. Sophia, don't not be there. I'm coming. I just need to get my things. We'll go soon. We'll go back. 7:00. The lights are on all through the ward, but they just hang there in their own blackness. I don't know what to do. In the dormitory, it's white. The beds extend forever. They're sitting there with their arms stretched out. Must squeeze open the door. It's like those silver threads in my eardrums been going on forever. And Orgil's eyes preparing them for battle. I'll take the big rucksack. Underwear, washing things, spare pullover for her, shoes. Can't see what they're doing. Now the door into the television room. Nobody looking.
It was all a mistake.
But the boss is holding counsel. There's hardly any time. I mustn't look at them. Just go. If I carry my rucksack low, they won't see.
Tennis page.
Very well, God. Yeah.
He saw me, of course. He sees everything. But I'm through. It's nearly 9. But it'll be all right. We'll need food. We'll have to eat in the hills. Biscuits. Butter. Bread knife. That's all. It's starting.
It's out there, too. It's starting. My feet aren't moving. Move. Move. It's starting and I'm too late. The door handle. Wait for her. Here. Alone. But the whole place is rocking. Its lights going out. It's dying. She's turning out the lights in there. I know she's not coming. She'll never come. She does it on purpose, of course. She's known all the time. Perhaps she's on the fire escape. Sophia!
I'm here.
I thought you weren't coming.
I'm sorry.
Have you got your things?
Yes.
We've got to leave now. Tell me, you want to leave?
I want to leave. It's time I went back.
Not back up there!
We can't go on, Daniel. I can't love you. I want to, but I can't. You frighten me.
Stop!
We won't see each other again. It's not the end of the world.
Please! Please! Stay!
No, leave me alone. You can't cut out that. Not that.
Stay! Stay!
He's coming round. Come on, Mr. Pashley. Take a sip of this. That's it. You're in disturbed ward, but it won't be long.
Where did they find me?
On the fire escape. Being a bad boy. Trying to climb into the women's wards, were you?
Was I alone?
You don't think anyone else would join in such a fool's thing, do you? Come on, drink it up now.
All that was years ago. I still walk in the hospital grounds sometimes, especially in winter, and watch the snow that comes down from the hills and falls on this asylum, which is my mind. The inmates have mostly gone away or died now. My mother too. Poor mother. And other people have moved into the ward. Sophia is dead too. I don't know when she died, but one day she simply wasn't there anymore. That's how people go here. I don't know what their final plans are for me, but life isn't exactly empty. Not even here, not even now. Every morning, looking through the windows, I see Orgil's sun lifting over the earth. And I feel moved, in a way.
Robert Dannister was Pashley and Harriet Walter Sophia in A Cruel Madness, a play by Colin Thubron based on his own novel. Jonathan Adams was McQuitty, Keith Drinkle, Gregory Nisbet, David Bannerman, Orgil, and Peter Penry Jones, the psychiatrist. Other parts were played by Terence Edmund, Neil Roberts, Mark Straker, and Joanna Wake. A Cruel Madness was directed by John Theocaris.